Well, welcome everybody to the February 7th Solid Waste Advisory Commission meeting. And I will entertain a motion to approve the minutes from our last meeting.
Move that they be approved as presented.
Any discussion regarding the minutes? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are so approved. Let's start with updates. Clark County Public Health.
Travis, you're up.
Pardon, I was shutting the door. What was that? Sorry.
Sure.
Updates?
Clark County Public Health.
All right, I apologize. All right, so my name is Travis Dutton, Solid Waste Program Manager at Clark County. Welcome, thank you all for coming. Just a few updates from the Solid Waste Operations and Education and Outreach Program. One health department-wide program that is probably worth sharing with this group is just the word measles. We are in the...
Pointing my ears on that one.
Okay. So that is a weird thing to talk about at the Solid Waste meeting. However, as our program is housed within the Solid Waste... within the Public Health Department, as most of you are aware, it is... defined as an outbreak and a state of emergency, which means what is called the incident command system has been put into place. And what that means is that any employee within the public health department is eligible to be called into the incident management team, which means at any given point about 50% of our program is doing measles investigation and mitigation and research related work, communication, outreach, press releases, social media. So a lot of our projects have been either put on hold or set aside or just slowed down. Those of us that are, the 50% of us at any given moment that are still at our desks and doing our regular program work are working very hard to keep our critical work, our contract work and all of those things and communication to the public related to solid waste, recycling, garbage up to, you know, the expectations and doing that critical work. But with a lot of the events coming up, that's had a pretty large impact on our staff. So while I have a lot of the updates for you today on what has gone on, our next foreseeable future is going to be dedicated to measles until they get this out of the way. So I'm more than happy to entertain measles-related questions, but I am no way a medical professional, so I only can repeat things that have been said to me. So, but that's been an interesting learning process for all of our program, and it happened quite quickly. So, as far as our outreach and education programs go, all of our green programs, in our Green Neighbors program, so our residential focused outreach and education program, our environmental outreach specialist, Jill, she coordinates and develops and manages the materials in that program. She is actually moving to Guam. I believe her husband got a job trying to control snakes that live in trees in Guam, which I also is a thing I just learned about, didn't know that was a problem. So we're going to be going through on top of this measles work, we're going to be trying to fill that vacancy as quickly as possible. So you'll probably see some job announcements for a residential outreach person here pretty soon. As far as our ongoing outreach work goes, we have a couple of repair cafes, which are community events where people volunteer to help fix things that often get thrown away or get discarded. So there's a repair cafe coming up on February 12th at the Smith Tower Apartments here downtown, and then on March 27th at the Vancouver Library. All of that information is available. I'm going to give you a lot of times and dates. It's all available on our Green Neighbors website. Also coming up, and there's a handout in your packet, is the Waste Busters Challenge. That is a voluntary 20-day choose-your-own-adventure kind of a waste reduction challenge where you pick one of three pledges. And I believe this year, I don't have an extra for myself, but I believe they are a bring your reusable bag. You make a pledge to do one of the three. It's a bring your reusable bag. Does anybody have that flyer in front of them?
Yeah. Eliminate disposable cups, so... bring your own cup, bring your own bag, and plan your daily meals.
Yeah, there's a food waste reduction element. So while The highest on the hierarchy of waste reduction is reducing the existence of the waste in the first place. So planning out your meals and food waste. So there are prizes involved with that. That is something that you sign up for. You make the pledge. So that also is on our Green Neighbors website. And then also our Recycled Arts Festival is beginning its artist registration right now. And again, that event is on June 29th and 30th. In our Green Business Program, which does outreach and technical support for waste reduction to businesses in the county, there's a Green Business Morning Blend for business owners and operators to come learn and communicate with each other at Simply Time Catering on February 21st. And these events have had about 20 to 30 people regularly, so they've been pretty well attended and a good group of rotating folks that come and network and learn about each other's businesses and what types of sustainable or waste reduction opportunities they're taking. We have our large Green Awards event, which is sort of like the local Oscars for people that are doing above and beyond amazing stuff in county as far as waste reduction and greening their business goes. So those are on March 20th. At, I believe it's at Kiggins again. It's a fun event. We've got some speakers and some people that come and talk. It's a really great opportunity to come and learn about what businesses are doing. And additionally, there are 7 businesses currently working towards their green business certification. Our Green Schools program, milk dispenser project that Kaylee came and presented to us a couple of months ago. There are 3 schools that they've all been rolled out in, York Elementary, Lauren Middle School, and Columbia Valley. They've all been going well, aside from Kaylee's story about them getting sprayed with milk, trying to figure out how the machine works. There have been no other issues. And Goss Elementary and Lackamas Lake Elementary are will be adding them later this winter. I do believe that Evergreen School District is going to be building some new schools and have considered permanent milk dispensers and other waste reduction options permanently in their development plans, and we'll be funding those. Our Master Composter program kicked off its new Master Composter Recycler program. They had 38 volunteers in training. All of those volunteers, after going through the training, provide 30 hours of volunteer time to public outreach, residential outreach. We're trying to make sure that those volunteer hours spread across all of the different programs and partners that we work with and making sure that they're made available and out there teaching residents how to go out and do above and beyond. On the operations side of things, we presented to you last time to get some feedback on the recycling rates increase. We have an update on that. It is still in process, but with your feedback, as well as the feedback from council, currently we drafted, there is an amendment to the contract and a letter being drafted. The gist is, the amendment will be approving a processing fee to be applied when recyclables are delivered to the transfer station after they've been collected curbside. In short, what this looks like is about $1.90 per month per household increase in the recycling bill in unincorporated parts of Clark County, Battleground, the center for our recycling rate increase.
Battleground,
the center, and Yackel to unincorporated Clark County. The city of Vancouver will be negotiating their own rate as well, and Washougal, Ridgefield, and Canvas will all be all negotiating their own rate as well, but they'll be about similar. But that is again to address the increased cost of processing recyclables now that there are more stringent requirements placed upon the recyclables that we're selling and collecting from residents. Also, one of the feedback pieces from both council and this group was the outreach and education around it. So we feel like there has been a substantial amount of media and information around the recycling challenges and the processing costs, and communicating that our recycling program is continuing, that we have not removed any materials from our program, and that we do not intend to remove any materials from our program. and that this is to allow us to continue our recycling as it is, so that the public has faith and trust that this system will continue and the materials that they're putting in their curb are being recycled. So we feel like there's been a lot of communication and media coverage on that. Additionally, Waste Connections will be, and now that you're here, you can, I have to be accurate. Waste Connections will be alerting residents to the fact that there is going to be a new processing cost added to their bills, and it will also be called out separately on the bill. And I don't remember what the wording was. Do you remember what the actual, what you're calling it on the invoice?
I don't think we've settled on the exact
title. So it will be called out on the invoice, and then we're going to talk a little bit more later about some subsequent outreach projects that we're going to do related to contamination and kind of making sure that our recyclable program is steady. So our plan is to, the amendment is currently being reviewed. We are hoping to have the county manager sign that agreement and that amendment mid-February, and that would probably mean that we would see the rates hitting people's bills in March. So people would start to see that $1.90 or a portion of that $1.90 in March. Does that sound about
correct?
Yeah. Are there any questions on that piece? I know that was, you know. Oh yeah, we're going to talk more about it later. It's on agenda. I'm sorry, I forgot. Okay. And then I think the last piece that I won't go into too much depth, but in your folder is a table. It looks similar to this one, and this is from WSRA and from the state, and it is basically a list of all of the active House and Senate bills that are up for hearing in the legislative session right now. So this is just more of an FYI, since we never really formally got a group or a subcommittee together to facilitate, you know, providing a voice to support or oppose or be neutral on any of these. This is just something for you guys to take a look at. Look through the titles. If any of them sound like something you would be interested in Slack pursuing, the timeline might not be fantastic, but we can see what we can do. So it is just an FYI. Several of them were actually heard today and yesterday, and I haven't got a status updates yet. But there's some pretty ambitious and some pretty big proposals on the table. So it's more of an FYI for people to take a look at and, you know. Right. Okay. Those are all of my updates. Kim had one more thing to add.
I just wanted to add that we added a new paint take-back location, so now all Parker's Hardwares in Clark County accept paint for recycling of latex, oil, and oil-based paint. So that's yay. Makes outreach a lot easier when you just say, go to any Parker's instead of specific ones. So that's now 12 locations, plus the three transfer stations, makes it 15 locations that folks can take paint to.
Is that being advertised, or is there any sort of communications on that?
Yeah, so it was just added. So I'm going to be doing a news release, and we'll be adding it to our A to Z, you know, widget where people, if they type in paint, it'll pop up. Mm-hmm. And then adding it to our website as well, and probably a Facebook announcement, those kind of things.
Okay, and then the Green Neighbors, will they have that information in an announcement?
Yeah, we could probably add it to the next newsletter.
I think that has a pretty broad reach.
Yeah.
Would be effective. That's good news, because you know that's paint care and all that, trying to get that through. Mm-hmm. But good news. Thank you.
On the bulk program, you mentioned Evergreen. What about Vancouver? I know Vancouver schools have a boatload of schools being rebuilt.
I don't know that we found. I know that when we made the offer, the offer was to all schools, and we kind of went with there was no criteria necessarily to pick and choose one or the other. It was more about which had the better, which seemed to be like a really forged path for us to get in. Like there was support from custodial staff, support from kitchen. So I know that in some of the school districts, Michelle is still working on kind of developing that relationship, and we don't want to put a machine into the schools until everybody's there to support it. So Vancouver hasn't come up on the list, but I don't know if Michelle is, I don't know to the extent that she's working with Vancouver School District. But if anybody has an in or a good contact or a good person for us to reach out to, let us know, Michelle. But I haven't been given any information that they are interested in having one yet. So.
As far as the paint goes, it is one of those bills, I think, I don't know, I haven't HB 1652 is the paint stewardship one, so we'll see what happens this year. Looks like it went to three, but yeah, I haven't heard yet what the result of that was. So it's a good one to follow for sure.
What's the number again?
It's just, you should have something like this in your packet. HB 1652, it looks like. It's paint stewardship.
That is it. The, like, turns the orientation side.
Yeah, sorry. It looks like this, but it's like, yeah, you're, it's the same thing.
And now that fantasy football's over, this gives you something to track to. If you want.
So.
We have an office pool. We should have one.
Oh, that would be fun.
So those are the solid waste right. program updates. Thank you.
Any more questions?
I'll start. Chuck Carman, the program manager overseeing the solid waste enforcement program, which does consist of a full-time environmental health specialist, Melissa Sutton. SWAC has received a report to which I'll cover. First of all, SWAC has already received the progress report from the last quarter of the activity of the solid waste enforcement program. I'll just touch on a few of the highlights of all the good work that Melissa's doing. We received 43 complaints in the last quarter, and resolved 43 of them. It was exactly the same 43, but it turned out those numbers matched up this quarter. Completed 12 solid waste handling, permitted solid waste handling facility inspections. And then we did receive one new permit application, and that is, we are going to have a presentation later about that permit and our review and the status of that for the SWAC. There are also exempt from permit facilities, but they still get inspected. And you can see on that report those numbers of how many of those were, 8 were inspected. And there's some exempt notifications that we've received for exempt from permit facilities, and we're working on those, reviewing those facilities, 3 of those. And then a quarterly report that we send to Ecology, who funds most of our, or all of our enforcement program, was also included in the report. And I know we always, if you're interested, can make available the details of some of the inspection reports with all the photographs. The file is just too large to send out in the email. So that SWAC has that summary. And the other thing I wanted to note, as far as activity inside the department related to solid waste enforcement, is we both the enforcement program and the outreach and operations programs are housed in environmental public health. I manage several other programs, which include the on-site septic program, drinking water protection, hazardous assessment, and a local source control program funded by Ecology. And we have a couple of food manager. Right now we're in the process. We've been recruiting, and I think the first window closed for accepting applications. We're going to hire another manager into environmental public health, and that manager to help with two primary reasons that we moved to that. First was allow program managers to have a better focus on programs. It can be hard sometimes when you have a lot of different programs, a lot of different laws, to focus on certain things. Also to provide sufficient support for the staff that work in those programs, and that will include solid waste enforcement, hazardous assessment, local source control, the school program, the beach monitoring and pools and spas inspection regulation program. And so we're in the process of hiring that manager. I can't give a timeline on when that recruitment will be completed and the hire decision made, but probably I'll guesstimate within the next 4 to 5 months. And so hopefully by the next SWAC meeting, we'll see. We'll bring on a new manager. And that's really all I have. We obviously have a lot of material to cover under the permit review.
City of Vancouver.
Hello. I need to be able to see all your faces in my update. My name is Tanya Gray. I'm with the City of Vancouver Solid Waste Department. I just have 3 quick updates for y'all tonight. The City of Vancouver, with a memorandum of understanding with Clark County, runs a regional leaf coupon program, and I wanted to give you the stats. We're on the other side of our leaf program and into our snow program now. But if you can think back to the fall, we collected 16,500 yards of leaves between October and December. That's countywide, so both city and county residents. That's a little bit less than we collected last in the previous year, 2017, but we had about the same number of participants, 6,600 in 2018, about 6,900 in 2017. So same number of people coming in, but maybe bringing in smaller loads. The cost of the program for disposal of those leaves in 2018 was $154,800, and then the year before in 2017 it was $169,000. So just some facts that might be interesting for you about the numbers associated with the solid waste program. And we are preparing to do that program in the same style again this coming year. The second update I wanted to let you know about is the City of Vancouver, our comprehensive collection contract, which is the specifications by which we collect garbage from businesses and residents within the City of Vancouver, will expire in January 2020. So our council asked staff to work with our current collection contractor, which is Waste Connections, to negotiate a new contract in preparation for the future. And we updated our council this Monday evening with the basic points that we've negotiated with the contractor. Probably those that are most interesting to this group is that we are proposing to begin a curbside residential food waste program. So residents within the City of Vancouver who are currently yard debris customers can now, well not now, but when we roll out the program, proposed to be October 2019, they can begin putting food waste into their yard debris carts. It will change to an organics program. Currently about 60% of our customers in the City of Vancouver are yard debris customers, so they'll become organics customers. Part of the new contract that is proposed would create new service levels. So if you don't have a yard, and perhaps you're not signed up for yard debris right now, but you are interested in diverting your food scraps, you could get a smaller cart for a little bit less cost. Another aspect of the contract is we're working with the collection contractor to implement a contamination reduction plan. Now, some of you might be familiar that Clark County, City of Vancouver, using ecology grant funds, has in the past run programs where we tag recycling carts. We have crews that go out, look in the carts, assess what's in them, and leave a tag that gives information to the customers. And that's been demonstrated to give customers information that they can act on, and it's a very good way to communicate with the customer base. So we've introduced the concept that this become a regular part of the way the collection contractor provides services. So the contamination reduction plan basically outlines the tenets of having new staff at Waste Connections heading up an effort to reach out to customers, not only the residents, not only the recycling carts, but also the organics carts. So they'll give feedback about the contents of those carts in a tag form. And then there will be a progression. So you'll get a warning, you'll be asked to change, you may have to pay for garbage removal if you don't clean up the material in your cart. This is an effort that we are introducing because of the fact that we're having to pay higher processing fees with the contamination that we're receiving at our processor. So I think I'll just go ahead and wrap it up there, and we can have time later in the meeting to discuss this if there are questions. Thank you.
I would like just to piggyback on that real quick. That it would be good, we would like to, if time for this meeting or maybe in a future conversation soon, to kind of get some select feedback on what a program might look like in the rest of the county and kind of figure that out. So be thinking about that when you're not consumed with other things that are going on.
Program like what? I'm sorry. Which one?
Oh, I'm sorry. The contamination, look, the cart, curbside contamination outreach program.
Derek, are you representing Waste Connections?
Yes. So I apologize, I'm late. I went to meet some headquarters first. I didn't touch anything, though, so I'm okay.
Measles is in the building.
Oh, okay. That's not what I said outside.
Information about the measles is in the building.
Gotcha. Okay. People may or may not know, but we're in the middle of our annual weather event process. So we canceled service on Tuesday and shifted service out one day, as is our normal process. If we foresee that there's not going to be additional weather throughout the week, we try and cancel service for just one day and shift everything out one day. If there's a major disruption with weather that we think is going to carry over multiple days, we'll have customers put out double the next week for no charge. So right now we're working through that. We've been looking at the weather about every 10 minutes to check and see where we're at on things. It looks like we're going to be okay today, tomorrow, tomorrow. And then Saturday, when we're picking up Friday customers, may be a little dicey. And then next week is pretty much snowmageddon, and we don't have great faith that we'll be collecting garbage next week, but we'll see what happens. So we're preparing for that. We've called together some drivers for weekend service to vital organizations that need daily service, so the hospitals, the casino, and some of the other, there's some nursing homes around town that need daily service, so we're making sure that they're getting their group, and we'll send out drivers and teams of two where they normally are driving independently. We'll send them out, drivers and teams of two, so it'll be a little easier for them to deal with the snow and the ice and everything else, and they can change up. So we'll work through that. It'll be a challenging week ahead, though. Any questions on the weather stuff? That's always a big concern of people.
Yeah, keep putting out the social media. That's getting shared a lot.
Good.
It's surprising how many people have no idea.
Right.
You know, if they have as much advance notice as you can give and we can get out, you know.
We are, just so everybody knows our process, we get up at about 3 o'clock in the morning on days when we know we have weather. I send out a couple of supervisors to drive the roads. They make a decision about 3:30 in the morning. They make a decision for the day, look at the forecast, look at the condition of the roads. So that's a real challenge. And then we immediately send out a call blast to our drivers and then members of the municipal staffs to let them know what our approach for the day is going to be. And then we move into social media. We do a phone blast to all the customers that are impacted on that day. And what else do we do? Well, we update our website as well. So we've got it down to a pretty good science that seems to work pretty well. I know I live in Portland, actually. My hauler did not notify me about what was going on, and nobody really knew, so there's been carts on the street for 3 or 4 days now waiting for collection. So I think it has.
Yeah.
It does.
Is it you? Is it you?
No.
Okay.
Unnamed smaller family.
Okay.
You talked about the recycling, and I won't hit on that necessarily. Contamination reduction plan I talked about. And then the other thing we have going on is the annual closing of locks. So they will close the locks, the dams, starting the first week in March. It's a 2-week lock closure, and all of our garbage is barged up the river to Finley Beach landfill. Or trucked to Wasco County landfill. So anything barged is disrupted for about 2 weeks while the Corps of Engineer does a repair work on several dams. And we have a pretty good process now where we truck some of the material, we stockpile some of the material and kind of work through it. A 2-week closure is not too bad for us. So we've got a pretty good plan that will be occurring in this way. That's all we got.
So I know there's folks from the public that want to speak to this issue, but the public comment period was closed. But you, if you want to speak at the end of the meeting, you're certainly welcome to speak to this issue at the end of the meeting.
So I'll just do a quick one more introduction for Melissa. Melissa Sutton has been managing the process and overseeing the permitting process that the county, following county and state code. She'll give a much more detailed presentation here about the background on this facility that's applied to get a compost facility permit, and some of the background history about the facility. She'll cover the requirements that the permit, the activities and the operations that the permit requires. She'll cover the review process that includes several other agencies' input into the review and approval of the permit. And at the, we've all, We've received quite a few public notices from folks that live around the facility as part of the outreach, so we've received quite a few comments on this. She'll talk to some of those comments that have been received, the SWAC, all the comments that were received during the reporting period, the comment period, were assembled and sent to the SWAC about a week ago. And then finally, move forward with the recommendation and ask to the Solid Waste Advisory Commission. So I'll let Melissa start and walk us through all that.
Hi, thank you all for coming. Again, my name is Melissa Sutton. I'm an environmental health specialist with Clark County Public Health. I've been with Clark County Public Health for 15 years. I've been an environmental health specialist for 18. For those, I know we have some new SWAC members as well. I've been the lead for the solid waste enforcement program for 11 years. We don't have a lot of new solid waste facilities, as those tenured SWAC members know. This probably the last 5 years we've had a spike, and I think we've only reviewed two. So this is a new process even for our SWAC, and definitely understand that. And so I do have a lot of information on some of the slides. Please don't worry. I went it there just to show the depth of the review and the process. You've received, again, the multi-agency review comments as well as the public comments, so I don't want to reiterate a lot of that, but I also wanted to showcase, in case there were members from the public, that there is a thorough review process in multi-agencies reviewing different components at different times, so I wanted to illustrate that. So a little bit of history. Section 30 materials voluntarily contacted Clark County Green Business Program, and they were like, hey, we want to be a green business. And Sarah Kearns, who runs our green business program, was like, Melissa, what do you know about this compost facility? I said, I know nothing. So through a series of communications, I requested that they submit a notice of intent, which is common for the first step. And when they sent the initial notice of intent, we received it March 21st, 2018, and we had to deny the application due to insufficient information. Following up from that, we scheduled a meeting with Washington State Department of Ecology, City of Vancouver staff, as the property is located within city limits of Vancouver, and myself. During the inspection, we said, oh, the volume of material that you have here is too much to qualify for the exemption, and so this is going to be required to be a permitted process. And so they contacted a consultant. The consultant developed the operations plan, which is what was available on the website. Through that, we've had a lot of conversations and questions before it finally got to the final step, and that's what was posted online for review. The activity is currently occurring without approval. The solid waste application was submitted by the applicant at the direction of Clark County Public Health. And as the business had made a good faith effort to obtain voluntary compliance, a stop work order has not been issued at this time. But we want to make sure that the facility goes through the proper permitting channels to do the right thing and make sure all of the checks are marked and the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. So this is kind of a request it's the continuation of activity. The solid waste permit application is requested by Tappany Material, doing business as Section 30 Material, to continue accepting and composting solid waste on property owned by Section 30 Materials. And they will be required to operate in accordance with the operations plan and permit if required, if approved. So the compost facility operates within an existing mining facility. And it's under Washington State Department of Natural Resource permit already for their mining activity. I've also been in a lot of communication. I had never met anyone from DNR. And through this process, we've had a lot of meetings. And this activity does not conflict with their mining operation. So I think that's important to note. So the Section 30 materials is seeking permit approval to accept, collect, and compost wood waste and vegetation debris. Their feedstock sources are limited to construction wood debris, landscaping, refuse, cannabis rendered unusable, and agricultural wood waste. It will not accept food waste, animal or human byproducts, animal carcasses, fiberglass, plasterboard, linear lumber, paint, roofing materials, metal, or any other similar products, so it is limited. I just wanted to point out, like cannabis, I think seems a little odd. In my 15 years with public health, I think I've had two or three conversations with Tanya where someone has a random marijuana plant that they somehow need to get rid of. We had a guy with 10-foot-tall marijuana plants that he needed to figure out what to do with, and H&H was like, can we take these? Can we not? What are the rules on that? And so when I was reviewing the initial plan that had come in, one of the words, and I don't even know, I should know the word now, but I was like, what does that word mean? And it says, when I looked it up, it says odors associated with marijuana. So I wrote back to a consultant, are you guys planning to use the cannabis products? And she was like, I don't know, we didn't really think about that. And so in doing research, we just wanted to make sure that it was captured. It is a natural plant product. It does have requirements through the Liquor and Cannabis Control Board. But I know that seems like kind of awkward of why is that in there. But we just wanted to make sure that in the event that there is a random person needing to get rid of rendered unusable cannabis products, that there was a place and that there was provisions and that it was part of the process. So that actually came about just because of prior random things that have come through my call desk in my 15 years of public health. So this is a vicinity map, so just so that you have a familiarity with where this is. So it is east of 152nd and just south of Northeast 18th Street. I wanted to provide this map as well, just so that you can see where this is in the Section 30 component, and then the surrounding neighborhoods, just so that you know for comparison. In front of, and this will come up kind of later too, but in front of this green line, there's a strip between that and the roadway, and that is actually a transit line for EPA power lines, so that's not actually owned by them. So that, just so that you have for spatial. So when we did our public notice comment period, our Clark County Code requires that we notify within 300 feet of the parcel. We actually extended out to the edge of the EPA power line, property line, to ensure that we got more of the public, because through mapping, that was the edge of that 300-foot boundary. Sorry, I keep hitting the thing. So these are site pictures of the operation as it was when we first did an inspection. The top picture is in May, so you can see it's drier, and then we went back in October for a follow-up inspection, so you can see in the 5 months. Currently, nothing is paved, but that would be required to change with a permit. So what is compost? There's been some confusion in some of the comments that we received from the public about municipal solid waste and hazardous chemicals and those kinds of things. So I wanted to provide the definition for compost means the biological degradation and transformation of organic solid waste under controlled conditions designed to promote aerobic decomposition. Natural decay of organic solid waste under uncontrolled conditions is not composting. All of the composting facilities standards fall under Washington State Administrative Code 173.350, subsection 220. For the purposes of this section, material on site at one time includes feedstock, active composting, curing piles, and the composted material. So it's collective. So If you have less than 25 cubic yards of material on site at any time, you don't have to notify the health department. You don't have to do any reporting. You can just compost that material. If you have between 25 cubic yards and 250 cubic yards of organic feedstock at any one time, then that requires that notification of exemption, which is kind of where we started with them. 150 cubic yards is still a lot of material, so most people can, or most businesses can fall within that parameter through that exemption process. In this particular case, we went out there and said, wow, your volumes are more than that. This is going to require a permit. So that's why we're at this point today with it being a required requirement for the permit.
How much above the 250 were they? Fish.
They estimate about 20,000 cubic yards, substantially over.
Sorry, Melissa, real quick. I know that I'm not in the back and didn't realize the projection. We thought we could, if we turned down a light, if we could, everyone in the back see, I know there's a lot of words on there. Yeah, so we don't know exactly, we don't use this room normally, so we'll try to see if I can find the right place to do it in front of the room.
I am sorry.
If I make that easier to, no, I just realized when looking at that slide that that might be difficult. So I'll give it a shot, but.
Sorry about that.
So if all the lights go off, we don't know what we're doing. Just a heads up if it goes dark.
Yes, I will brace myself for darkness.
Good.
Yeah, do them gradually moving down. I think that's kind
of. So I don't want to get the whole room dark. Or
no, that's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
That
was
good. Does that help?
Yep. I think it may help on slides where there's not as much text. So.
Sorry. A lot of this is just quoted straight from the LAC, so I'm trying to read that for you. So. The big thing on owners, operators of any solid waste facility are required to meet the performance standards, design, construct, operate, close, and provide post-closure care as applicable at any solid waste facility in a manner that does not pose a threat to human health or the environment. I wasn't planning to read all of these, but if you can't read them in the back, I can. The most important, the next one is not be in conflict with the approved local comprehensive solid waste management plan prepared in accordance with Chapter 70.95 RCW, solid waste management reduction and recycling, and or local hazardous waste management plans prepared in accordance with the solid waste management chapter. And the third one is the most important, is comply with all other local, state, and federal laws and regulations. So that means before we can issue a permit, they have to be in compliance with all applicable state, local, and federal laws and regulations. Leachate means water or other liquid within a solid waste handling unit that has been in contact with solid waste or has been contaminated due to contact with landfill gas. So all compost facilities must manage stormwater and leachate to meet the standards of Washington State Administrative Code and all federal, state, and local water and air quality permits. Leachate management features that are pertaining to this project include but not limited to the leachate collection, conveyance, storage, and structures or treatment systems. And the leachate must be collected from all the feedstock storage and preparation areas, the active composting areas, and the curing areas. And then all of that leachate must be conveyed over to a leachate storage structure. So this particular plan, they are planning to have a leachate pond created, and that would be aerated. They're required to do testing and monitoring of the compost based on the regulations in the WAC. So the proposal is to test for these parameters. They're required to do daily visual inspections, check for oil chains, there's odor, moisture content, various things. This is taken also from their operations plan. Record keeping, they're required by Washington State Administrative Code to keep records regarding daily temperatures, representative of the compost piles, compost sampling, their facility inspection reports, and then prepare and submit an annual report. City of Vancouver, so we sent this out initially to multi-agency for their feedback comments. City of Vancouver came back with quite a few comments, including a lot of it has to do with their engineer plans for their leaching management. They're requiring additional details, construction details primarily. In their initial assessment, they had hoped that before today's meeting that they would have that all approved, and at this time they do not have that approval. The city is going to require permanent asphalt or concrete surfaces. Tappany has responded that they will utilize an asphalt for all parking, storage, and maneuvering areas. But they also have, under the solid waste plan, they also have to improve underneath the compost facility where the composting activity is occurring, as well as where the feedstock is and any access roads to and from that the public would utilize. They are requiring an operation maintenance manual to review pollution and prevention operational guidelines for the leachate pond. There was no stormwater management provided, therefore no discharges will be permitted. The facility is not planning to discharge their material. It should all be handled within the leachate pond, and they will utilize that leachate water for watering of their compost. The use is allowed based on a recorded pre-annexation development agreement applicable to the site, which vests the site to uses permitted in the city's development code at the time of annexation. So there's a 2006 recorded document. So waste-related uses such as composting are permitted on the site. They're allowed heavy industrial, and by definition in the city code for later use, it meets that requirement. The proposed site improvements do not trigger the need for approval of a site plan review or CEPA review for the city's process. The second kind of big topic item was from Southwest Clean Air Agency. An air discharge permit will be required for the facility. They have submitted the application for the air discharge permit, but it has not been issued at this time. The facility must utilize best available control technology. Southwest Clean Air Agency has indicated that positive aeration with a 12-inch biofiltration layer on the pile or equivalent technology will be required. The solid waste regulations specifically say these regulations do not require aeration, so that has to come from Southwest Clean Air, which is our local air authority, and they are going to require that. Southwest Clean Air also made comments about the ratio that they're using for their carbon nitrogen ratio, so that they can, and they recommended a 25-to-1 versus the 20-to-1 that was presented in the operations plan to minimize ammonia and potential odors. The active compost pad, Southwest Clean Air recommended that they have a steeper slope to 2% to minimize ponding, and putrescible materials that they be incorporated into the compost the same day it is received so that they're not stockpiling overnight to address odor concerns as well. Washington State Department of Ecology, they have some modification requirements regarding some of the language that's utilized in the plan. Part of it says mechanically sweep or paved areas at the end of each shift. Ecology recommends adding or as needed. They recommend rewording the definition for mixed loads in one section and requiring modification to some sections to ensure that the feedstock stormwater from the feedstock area is also captured as leachate for the requirements. The proposed activity is not covered under ecology sand and gravel permit. Although the site itself has a sand and gravel permit through Department of Ecology, this composting activity would not require coverage separate from that. There is no discharge, as I stated earlier, and therefore there's no ecology's industrial stormwater permit to apply. The Liquor Cannabis Board They just recommended that the word cannabis be used throughout the document instead of just one place, and to ensure that the crop residue and waste criteria guidance are adhered to. Department of Natural Resources, they are currently the lead agency for this site, for the mining activity that they're doing. They've indicated the composting activity does not conflict with the existing DNR permit. The finished compost material cannot be utilized as backfill material for the land reclamation, and the compost area will need to be shown in the upcoming reclamation permit for the site. All of that information was shared with Tappany representatives. They're in agreement to make those changes to the plan and to the site to come into compliance and bring the facility back to a permitted level. We did do a public notice period per Clark County Code 2412. Sorry that this is so codey, but being a permitting process, it is the nature of the beast, so I apologize. We have Clark County Code 2412, which is our public health local code regarding solid waste permitting. It requires that we send notification, that we publish notification of our SUC meeting 10 days prior to the meeting, and that all property owners within 300 feet of the subject property are sent written notice of this meeting. And so that's where that whole buffer area comes into play. So when we did the initial buffer map, this is the 300 foot parameter from those properties, and you can see that the edge of the buffer line puts it right at the edge of the street there, and it did not include any of the surrounding community per se. So we went ahead and extended that boundary so that it did include the neighbors, so that we went to beyond that buffer zone. So we did send written letters to the property owners on January 8th, and then when we learned that our meeting location had to change due to the measles outbreak, we sent a second notice on January 25th. And our public notice was published in the paper on January 10th and 17th, and then when we learned of the change of the room, there was a third notice published in the Columbian on the 31st. We received 114 comments from the public. They were scanned and sent to U.S. SWAC members. A majority of them had, or all of them had, the same general theme. Air quality, both odors and noise, land use, concerns regarding incompatibility with surrounding homes, schools, parks, and churches, and traffic regarding road infrastructure, safety, reduced visibility, speeding, road debris, etc. So I just kind of went through and did a response for those concerns. So air quality concerns are primarily addressed in Clark County by Southwest Washington Clean Air Agency. Regarding the odors, so Washington State Administrative Code 173.352.20 requires the facility to control dust and nuisance odor from migrating beyond property boundaries in accordance with the performance standards. And again, Southwest Clean Air Agency is going to require an air quality permit. They're going to require aeration for the compost piles and covering. So that should help to alleviate the odor concerns. Violations of the air quality permit would default to Southwest Clean Air Agency. As far as noise, I also shared all of this information with Tappany representatives so that they could comment as well. Some of them are regulatory and some of them are more subjective, I guess. So I wanted to make sure that they had an opportunity also to comment on some of the concerns. In response to the noise concerns, Tappany is limiting the composting facility hours that are somehow not showing up here that were earlier. So I apologize for that. The mining operation operates Monday through Saturday from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. So those were the same hours that were put into the operations plan to mirror. But Tappany, based on some of the comments, they have agreed that in the summer months, the summer months in the summer, 4 in the winter, and 5 in the summer.
Well, so I think you have another slide that has more of those details on it.
Oh, is that later?
It's somewhat repetitive, but it has some of those details. I think go on to the next
one. Okay, thank you. I just didn't want to miss that part. So they've reduced the hours, and they've also, there were concerns in one or two of the comments regarding a sweeper truck that was running past 9 o'clock currently, so they've subsequently requested their sweeper truck to stop, to end at 7 o'clock, just to help to address some of those concerns. The land use concerns, those concerns are primarily addressed through City of Vancouver. The Washington State Administrative Code 173.352.20, the portion regarding location, there are no specific location standards for composting facilities subject to this chapter. However, the facilities must meet their performance standards. So there's nothing in the Washington Administrative Code that allows for me to discern regarding location. That's not part of the public health review piece, unfortunately. The City of Vancouver has provided the underlying zoning of the property is industrial and allows for this type of activity. Based on a pre-recorded 2006 pre-annexation development agreement, the use is allowed. I provided the section of the Vancouver Municipal Code regarding heavy industrial use, and in that is waste-related activities, which includes this composting activity. Another comment, or air quality concerns, again, were addressed by Southwest Clean Air Agency. The odors, they must control the, so some of this is repetitive, so I apologize. I'll try to keep it brief. Again, they'll have to control their dust and nuisance odors from migrating beyond the property. Is this just too totally duplicative? I apologize.
It has more detail than the other ones, so I think you provided the hours, I think.
Oh,
in
addition to the
earlier slide.
So again, they'll have the aeration requirement, and then violations would go to Southwest. The hours here are winter hours would be 7 to 4 Monday through Saturday, and summer hours would be 7 to 5 Monday through Saturday. So kind of our general review. Public health staff reviewed the application and determined it complete according to WAC 173.350. City of Vancouver, as you can see, still has some outstanding issues, as does Southwest Clean Air. We cannot issue a permit for this site until all of the terms and conditions have been met, so that they are meeting the performance standards for the WAC. We're working with the Tappany representatives. The plan will be updated to include all of the multi-agency responses and comments and requirements. The plan will be updated to include engineered construction details for the aerated compost pile and the leachate collection system. The facility will implement the conditions, and any special conditions provided will be added to the permanent conditions for the facility. Public health staff recommendation. The application is complete in regards to Washington Administrative Code 173.352.20. However, based upon the requirements identified in the multi-agency review process, additional information is required to be submitted by the applicant prior to CCPH issuing a permit for the solid waste handling activity. Public Health recommends issuing the solid waste permit once the applicant has provided Public Health with an updated operation plan, and that they've documented that they've implemented the requirements of infrastructure, the paving, the aeration, the leachate collection pond. The next step is for SWAC to make a formal motion to conditionally approve or disapprove Clark County Public Health staff moving forward with the permitting process and issuance of the solid waste permit once staff has determined the applicant has met all of the requirements. That is my condensed version. I hope that was thorough enough, but to answer some questions and address some of the comments, I'm open to hearing questions that you may have as well, or
How long have they been operational as a composting facility unpermitted, do you think?
So we learned of the activity through a notice of intent March 21st, thank you, March 21st of 2018. On the notice of intent that they provided, they had been in operation since March of 2017. So it has been nearly 2 years.
What do they do with their leachate now?
Valerie, would you like to speak to that?
So at the time that they started operations...
Sorry, this is Valerie Yuskowski. She is the consultant working with Tappany.
At the time that they had started operations, they were unaware of the requirements for leachate management. So they, in response to this, have cut back how much they are accepting and managing as far as any composting waste to the bare minimum. And it's our intent, as soon as we have some direction from SWAG on whether we can or can't move forward, that we're going to finish up with committing to get infrastructure in place, and during that time, composting will have to come to a complete stop and export material out to get it onto the surfaces for collection.
Valerie, if you could speak, maybe if you want to come out, or they can't hear in the back.
Oh, I hear word. I'll try to speak louder. So they were unaware at the time when they started composting that there was a requirement for leachate management. So in response to learning to this, we've cut back the operation significantly as far as the composting. The mining operation separately is continuing. So we expect here shortly to take up the last bit of the compost and go ahead and move forward with the construction of the leachate pond and collection pad. After we get direction from SWAG whether or not we will be issued a permit traditionally or not. So that's kind of where they're at right now, is cutting back what they're doing and bringing it to stop. We can either discontinue the operation or put in the leachate management system.
Any other questions for Melissa?
I had one question. So I read the response to the comments, and the first paragraph is on the last page under general public comments. It says the composting facility is within an existing mining operation and is exempt from the solid waste regulations. So I'm not sure really what that means, what they're trying to say there.
They're not exempt from the, unless it's related to the, is it an inquiry regarding?
Well, it says it's in a mining, it's an existing mining operation, and I guess therefore it is exempt from the solid waste regulations. So I read into that, why are we even dealing with this if they're saying that
it's not? The compost portion is not exempt based on the volume.
You're reading comments back from the company.
From the
correct?
Company.
Right, yeah. Okay. So I'm not sure really what they mean by that.
So
the mining operations themselves don't fall within the solid waste operations. So we understand that the composting does, but the mining operations are separate from solid waste operations. So we're trying to make sure that there's an understanding that those are two separate operations, the composting is solid waste, and then the mining and reclamation that goes there is not part of solid waste.
But the odors, I mean, this references the odors, the noise from trucks, truck traffic, hours of operation, that's kind of the concerns.
Yes. Yeah, so,
and then you're saying you can't really talk about those because they're not, it's with the mining, it's not with the composting, but it seems like trucks have been coming in delivering feedstock for composting, and you've got odors from composting operation and from the leachate.
Yeah, there's two separate sets of issues if you would, that you definitely have the truck traffic from the mining operations, and you have the noise and the dust and the odors from those. And then you also have what's generated by the solid waste composting action as well. So when you look at what happens with the mining operations, those are regulated under a separate set of conditions from the solid waste composting. So the mining operation itself
doesn't have restrictions as far as number of trips, like what you see in more some of the more recent mining operations, would be limited to like 100 trips per day. You don't see that with the mining facility that's there currently. So it's a little bit hard for us to draw a line and say what goes where, because you'll have a truck that maybe comes in that's dropping off like feedstock material to be composted, but then picks up mining material and then leaves. So in that case, you have a bit of a mixed trip situation where the truck was coming regardless under the mining umbrella, but now they're able to drop material off for composting, which is what's been happening in the past. And yes, there have been some trips that are 100% composting, but those are a very small fraction of the overall trips that are coming and going from the site.
But it seems like we can't broad brush all of the comments on those issues and say that's all mining, because the composting operation has some of that. Some of those issues can be attributed to compost side effects. Right?
Absolutely, and that's those issues in there with like the odor and stuff like that. That definitely does come into the composting facility rather than the mining, and that's something that's going to be addressed with the Clean Air Agency on how they issue our permit, with the requirements for treatment and air management and stuff in there.
And Kent had a question earlier.
Okay. We talked about somewhere, you know, we talked about aerating the compost material. How are they going to aerate them? That I don't know how they're going to aerate the compost material.
So I've put Lamoureux from Compost Clean Air Agency. He can probably speak better to that than I. Again, the solid waste regulations don't stipulate that that's a requirement. So.
And we haven't seen a design yet. Typically, I mean, there's a number of different ways to do it. Typically, there's some sort of piping underneath the waste, and they either push air in or pull air in, and sometimes do both in the same pile. And just to make sure that, you know, and then usually there's a plenum over that piping to distribute the air within the pile. Because there's lots of flavors, there's lots of ways to do it.
So that piping or some other system is going to be installed before the compost is put on this. Is that?
Typically, there's different ways to do it. Sometimes it's permanently installed. Sometimes it's a piece of PVC that they can kind of like sewer pipe with distribution piping with lots of like an aseptic system or something with lots of holes in it. And you can drag it out of the pile. So, you know, it can be a temporary system that just gets built every time you build a pile. Other times it's built into the concrete that the pad, that the waste sits on.
Yeah. So I know we're talking about the Section 30 composting, stuff like that, and there was time restraints on vehicle traffic and when they could be operating. Does that also coincide with restraints on when mining operations and vehicle traffic can happen there? Or is there going to be a situation where, like where you mentioned, the truck's going to be there anyway for mining, so we're going to drop off compost as a way to kind of skirt the rule?
I don't believe that's their intent. Their limitation to the hours was in response to the public comment. Typically, they've operated the mining from 7 to 7, and it's their intent that they would pull back as necessary. And you'll see some, it's later in the evening, you're going to see, like, typically it's more of your maintenance activities where they're closing up for the day, security, cleaning, any maintenance that needs to be done. It's usually what's happening later in the evening. You'll occasionally see reclamation activities that push a little bit later into those evening hours from doing a big back haul on rebuilding slopes and things of that nature, filling.
Okay.
But it's not their intent that they split hairs and say, oh, well, I might be bringing in composting, but we're calling it a mining trip. That's not the intent.
And
yes,
from public health, as far as a permitting perspective, there is nothing that requires a stop at 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock. That's the operations plan. They're obliged to operate within the parameters of the operation plan. Waste connections go 6 to 6. I mean, there is flexibility. The mining operation component, while it's in the same vicinity, they currently operate 7 to 7. And just in response to the noise concerns, they voluntarily elected to have those hours.
Okay.
Can they voluntarily elect to extend those hours in the future?
They could.
Can I ask another question about the odor?
Yes.
Okay, so there's this little thing that says from the Southwest Clean Air Agency that says best available control technology must be used, which is an aeration system. But the response from the applicant says aeration will be necessary unless the facility can demonstrate that other methods, i.e. pile turning, can achieve the no odor goals while maintaining anaerobic conditions necessary to achieve composting. So they're saying maybe, maybe not.
Well, that's still to be worked out, of course. We haven't issued a permit. And I imagine we'll probably have future discussions. My initial assumption was that most people, most operations, achieve this through active aeration. And it also depends on the feedstock. Some feedstocks are very inactive, like H&H does a lot of leaf composting, requires much less management because it's very, very slow, so it doesn't use a lot of oxygen very quickly. But in general, I think usually where we end up is active aeration.
I guess it seems like one is more reactive. In other words, if the odor is really bad, then we'll do something different.
Oh, right.
Or
right.
One is
typically proactive. Typically, our requirements are to maintain aerobic conditions at all times, not to let it go anaerobic and then turn
wild.
Yeah, that's generally a bad idea.
And that was one of the things that, based on Clint's comments that we had during the public notice process, that we've agreed, based on his comments and his experience and feedback, that we will be aerating those piles. So we're definitely planning on adopting the recommendations from the agencies incorporating them in operation.
Any other questions for Melissa?
Yeah,
I have one more.
Okay.
Sorry.
No,
so in this December 5th document,
uh-huh.
It says that ecology will make a recommendation to CCPH within 45 days of receipt of a complete application. Mm-hmm. Have you received their recommendation? Not 45 days, you know,
it has been. It's within that time frame. And again, they provided those comments that there's other conditions that will be required. That they'll have to modify the plan. So
we've received their comments.
Yes, you received their comments.
So is that, I mean, this says they will make a recommendation. Is that the recommendation?
I've been in communication with Derek Rocket with Washington State Department of Ecology. He is my counterpart at Ecology. We don't have any formal recommendation. We could ask for that if you'd like. But at this point, we don't. There's several conditions that do need to be met, as outlined by the presentation, in order for them to even meet the performance standards, so that we could get to the point of issuing the permit. And that's why our recommendation is to allow a conditional approval to move forward with the process, so that they can. They don't want to invest a bunch of money into the paving and the leachate pond and an aerator and getting all this stuff just to be like, oh yeah, we don't support that. So this is kind of a preliminary approval process, and Ecology, Derek Rocket with Ecology, does support that motion. If you would like something formal in writing that they support that, I'd be happy to. Like
well, I mean, just said what one was.
Yeah.
So I would have been interested to see whether you recommended it or not.
We're also prepared.
Yeah, we will contact and talk to Ecology about this question.
Yeah.
Any other questions for Melissa? Any discussion on this topic?
Yeah, I'll apologize for being long-winded ahead of time. I had a little bit of downtime this week to look this up. I read through about half of the citizens' comments that I could that I had time to go through, and made notes of the different areas of concern. They included just the ones that I noted here: air quality and odor, groundwater, hazardous materials, traffic, roadside debris, historical oversight issues with Tappany, property values, and impact on potential businesses. A couple of them, I don't think Tappany can have a whole lot of sway over, like roadside debris. If I don't tie down my load, that's not their problem. Hazardous materials, I think we've already established that hazardous materials aren't going to be permitted. The air quality and odor, I'm not an expert in that at all. I'm going to come back around to that. I think Rich has some information on groundwater I hope he'll share with us. I drove out there the other day just to take a look at what the traffic issue is. Not good. You start putting extra vehicles out there, that's going to create a whole lot of issues out there. The road's barely wide enough for two semis to pass without clipping rearview mirrors. I know if I was a parent trying to slip into the school during school hours, I'd be concerned about traffic, especially if I'm trying to turn out and go eastbound. Also on the weekends, you've got the Harmony Sports Complex and some ball fields. Baseball season's right around the corner. The traffic impact is going to be ridiculous. Property values. I read one specific comment. I don't recall who it was from, but he had spoken to a realtor, and he said there could be a potential of $20,000 devaluation of property. I contacted a realtor friend of mine and kind of explained the situation to him, and he said that $20,000 could be on the low end of the devaluation. He said the closer properties could see a $40,000 hit. That's a big concern for these folks. Impact on future businesses. Who's going to want to go in next to these people? You know, potential incoming businesses may take that into consideration and say that's not a consideration, but it still kind of puts some handcuffs on some people that could go in there. And then the historical oversight issues with Tappany, you know, they've got a pretty sketchy history in Clark County as it is. Just take Livingston Mountain for an example. And then when they realized that they were over capacity, they continued to operate like that. You know, a good steward of the community would have said, whoa, we need to dial this back until we get it figured out. They just marched forward. So I have real issues with this permit being granted myself.
I'm the new kid on the block, but I think there's more questions than there's answers.
Any other comments?
My concern is that they're continuing to operate without a permit. It's been 2 years. And I think a lot of the work that needs to be done isn't going to be done as material continues to flow to the site. So I know for our stormwater control, the recommendation is to do pavement under everything, not just the stockpile area or the processing area, but the receiving area and everything. And that can't happen if we have compost being brought in and continue to be brought in. So it seems to me like a recommendation SWAC should make is stop. Don't do anything more coming in. Get all the permits in place, understand what's needed before we move ahead with the permit. And that could be conditioning the permit. So I think that should be something that we do. I think we have that option to either approve, fine, go ahead, or deny, or somewhere in the middle is kind of saying, hey, these are the conditions that need to be met. Let's do that. Let's stop operating until we get all of these approvals done. Once the approvals are done and we know everything's managed, then we can move ahead with things and making sure that things are handled. The other issue is, for these type of projects, typically there's a state environmental policy act or a CEPA review that gets done. Typically that's tied to the land use, since the city's land use really can't do anything because it's a pre-existing development agreement. It seems like Air Quality Agency may be able to do CEPA review as part of their permit, because they would, I think, be the lead agency that if that's the permit that's required. The city requires approval of stormwater plan, engineered plans, but doesn't have a permit, so really the seats would have to be triggered, I think, by the Clean Air Agency.
The stormwater will be discharged in the ground. Isn't there a UIC permit that has to be obtained through Ecology?
And right now, the operation has been cited twice. Well, I think actually three times. There's been, I think, a $500 citation, a $250 citation, and a $1,000 citation. I believe all of that's under the Water Resources Protection Ordinance. Yeah. And I know our... Yeah, within the last few months, I think, or maybe in the summer, I'm not sure. And it seems like there's no way to get a handle on things as long as the thing continues to operate. So leachate now is going right into the groundwater without any controls. And once the operation has is paved, then all of that leachate runoff that has been on that processing site has to go through a leachate pond and collect it and move off site. They can't really assess where that's going to go until they get the controls in place. Right now, there are no controls.
Permits, review, plan approval, building is what, 9 months, a year? No.
It seems to me like we shouldn't continue to operate while we wait however long that time is.
I guess I'm kind of wondering what happens with the leachate in the meantime, though, if they stop operation.
If they stop operation, they would stop accepting the material. It would be hauled off-site.
And I believe they do have another site where they are doing some processing, so again, they could haul the material they have off to another site.
That's the last question.
That was land clearing efforts that they had at a site, TiVo. But that's not the answer. They had land clearing as TiVo pit, which is up near Battleground. They had land clearing efforts through their mining activity. Total, they didn't have trucks coming in and processing compost material. It was stockpiling.
Your recommendation for approval is because it meets, or you think it can meet all the regulations, or it's met all the regulations
so far? My recommendation is basically asking SWAC's approval to conditionally move forward with the solid waste permitting process. Not to issue the permit or deny the permit, but to work through the process to see if they can meet the terms and conditions.
Would we be revisiting this before, I mean, after that?
We certainly could bring that to SWAC. Mm-hmm.
And if we don't vote in favor, then what happens?
Chuck?
Well, no, I think, you know, we're here to listen to your comments and feedback. And, you know, right now, I mean, I'd wait to see what the SWAC recommends. I think there's been some good commentary on that. I don't think we could go to the health officer, Dr. Melnick, and talk to him about all those concerns and work with him on making a decision. But she certainly takes seriously the things that you've raised. And again, comments that we have received. part of what our review has been is to look at, certainly listen to those comments and get that information, make sure that the proposed operation will meet all of the standards that the law provides, but right, the current situation doesn't afford that. So I think that's good feedback. So I don't want to make a decision for the health officer. I mean, at this moment, I think we'll hear what you guys recommend to us for taking the health officer and work with him on making a decision about, like, in other words, do we want to, like, depends on what you recommend. But if you came forward with a recommendation that you felt that they needed to cease operation. We certainly would talk to the health officer about that and seriously consider that.
If I might, I did prepare something as a start for discussion. So if you're okay, I can circulate it and see if people are interested in discussing maybe. And these are the concepts of the conditions that we would kind of include as a recommendation. I'm not sure if they fit with what you're asking there as a condition piece, or, and again, something we can start maybe to just work on wordsmithing or come up with even something better.
Melissa, in the past, has this been kind of standard procedure for other companies trying to go through this process where they start operations and then just move forward and then realize they have to permit and just keep moving forward?
Not typically.
Okay.
Typically, we get notification before they start operation. In this particular situation, because they had come to us like trying to be a green business and generate, right. You know, trying to go through the channels, and they thought they were doing what they should be doing. And because it was a voluntary process, it has taken longer than I initially expected, but just writing up the plan and getting everything written off, and I've reviewed it about 3 or 4 times and got some feedback and comments from Ecology, so I think this is actually the 3rd draft that finally made it out, just to get changes. So we wanted to present the best available document. It meets the minimum requirements, but there are other conditions that are going to be required by multi-agency. So the ask is, you know, for them to know if the recommendation of stock is stop, you're done, no more, or stop work order, you know, do a stop work order, get all your ducks in a row, and then the permit can be issued. And I think they just want to make sure before they invest all of the time and the money and resources into getting all of the ducks in a row. We don't want to, you know, build paradise.
Yeah, no. Absolutely, and that makes complete sense. They don't want to invest in that infrastructure if they're not going to, in the end result, get the permit.
Exactly.
But the last 2 years, and say we decide to recommend approval to move forward, so 3 years before everything's all done, what revenue have they received unpermitted to that point?
And
are they taking advantage that other businesses wouldn't have taken advantage?
Chuck and I have talked offline too, and even Valerie as the consultant. I mean, in order for them to build the infrastructure anyway, they have to stop work. They have to get everything off to pave everything. That's plain and simple.
Right.
So stopping work is something that we have talked to them about. Initially, communications were coming from City of Vancouver through the stormwater. In the initial review that they did, their conversations with happening was that was going to stop. So I really thought that it was going to at that point. So we formally have 90 days to approve or deny a permit. We can, through mutual agreements, allow a continuance, kind of put a hold on this, and so, you know, kind of stop that 90-day clock until they've met the terms and conditions. But it's really just to bring that to the table here for SWAC to hear the proposal. It meets the minimum requirements, but there are extraneous requirements that are beyond the controls of the solid waste permit per se. So while the application is complete per the WAC governing solid waste handling facilities, it's not able to meet the performance standards, so therefore we're unable to issue a permit. But our ask is for SWAC's recommendations for a path moving forward. That's our ask.
So of the conditions that I talked about in, you know, gleaning from the customer or from the landowners, the property owners, the homeowners, of those list items that I brought up, how much of that does SWAC have sway over? Like, I don't think the roads are appropriate. Do we have sway over that as their operation? Is that something that they would have to take up with another area?
I have specifically sent comments to City of Vancouver. They are the agency who has jurisdiction on the land use and like traffic study if that's going to be required. And because this already meets the land use and doesn't trigger like a secret process through them, that whole traffic study portion is not something that they're able to review at this time. So I specifically did, based on the comments from the public, I was like, City of Vancouver, here's the female, here's the female, here's the female. Just like Port Clint, he got the clean air, all of the comments regarding clean air that were unique as hair clean, hair clean, hair clean, so that they would be aware of the concerns related to their regulatory oversight. I only have regulatory oversight as it pertains to Washington Administrative Code 170.350, the Solid Waste Code, RCW 7095, and our Clark County Code 2412 regarding solid waste. Those are the realms that I have, and as it pertains to solid waste. I don't know to what.
But again, right, then to remind folks, I mean, that any operation has to meet other local applicable law. So that's why we've done the multi-agency review with all the other jurisdictional, you know, parties that are responsible. So I just want to make sure that,
yeah,
that, you know, that we, I know what you're saying, what the things we review and act on as the permitting agency, but it also includes they have to meet all the other necessary requirements.
That the regulatory
that the other departments have placed on the operation.
But the regulatory agency who has regulatory oversight regarding traffic has said that they don't have anything that would require them to pursue further with the traffic study.
And what I understand, I talked to our stormwater folks today who were frustrated by the land use tackle side of it, said that if the SEPA were done, then our traffic folks would look at it. Because the SEPA basically gets circulated to all the agencies, everybody gives input. And I'm not sure if that's how that process works when it's not the local land use people starting that process. But they thought that
Clean Air is the SEPA.
Because they have a permit, they have to circulate it.
How come a SEPA isn't being triggered? I mean, you won't build more than 50 cubic yards, right? Just building the roads.
I think it's because it's sort of grandfathered in under this mining land
they're
use.
Vested. They have a vested use.
So you have a grandfathered parcel amongst the developing area.
Yeah.
For these older uses.
And that was all put in
the
this rural
agreement.
Area.
The development agreement is to their successors, to anyone else who purchases the land.
Yeah. So the city did this when they got it annexed.
With the city annexation is when that development agreement.
Right. In order to keep those uses allowed. So let me ask you this question. All right. So you said that it meets all the WACs. Or you think it can meet all the WACs. This board or this commission says, no, we don't want you to move ahead. You guys go back, review it, Dr. Melnick. Dr. Melnick says, all right, I'll go along with that. Let's not move ahead. What are the applicants, what can they do then?
They can appeal the process.
To
the Board of Health. There's an appeal process.
Oh, sorry. One more. There was a slide back there about the DNR and that this has to be incorporated into the reclamation plan.
Uh-huh.
I think you just. Is there any? I mean, Section 30 is a grandfathered use in a developing area.
Yeah.
Is there any idea how long the current uses are going to be maintained? Does anybody know how it's going to be until it's mined out or until the owners of the property are going to want to develop it or do something else with it? Is this a 2-year deal, a 20-year deal, or do we just not even know?
Now we may have more insight from Mark.
It's my understanding that there is about 3 to 5 years
of life left in there, which is kind of what we're looking at as far as like the terms of composting operation would be there.
There's gravel, 3 to 5 years of gravel.
Yeah, well, and the reclamation that goes with that. So you get the material out, you also have the reclamation.
Right.
So that was the intent with the composting facility, and I think this is one that gets pretty muddled because you don't have that land use process like you would if you were anywhere else in Clark County or even the city. If this developer's agreement put a twist in that you don't normally see. The intent is at this time is that composting facility would be there through the active mining and reclamation portion, and then the site would go open to redevelopment very likely under that sub area plan rather than staying heavy industrial as it's committed to with the developer's agreement. So I know a lot of work was put into that sub-area plan after the developer's agreement. I know the developer's agreement does allow them to stay heavy industrial for as long as they want and even develop in the future. But I don't think that's the intent. And I don't think that the composting is going to sit there for the next 30 years.
Putting a lot of investment in 3 to 5 years.
Well,
I guess the other thing is, let's say the gravel's all mined out in 5 years, reclamation's done in 5 years.
Yeah.
Then you got to go through your next development plan and then develop it in stages and everything else. Mm-hmm. Could still be 10, 15 years before they'd have to close down the development. It's a big piece of property.
It is, and there's a few different tax parcels there, and I haven't been involved with their long-term planning is and how they see that for going. And that's part of the reason why we wanted to come before the board at this point, because it is a lot of cost and infrastructure for that 3 to 5 years. And before we tip over to that where it's not financially feasible, we want to have input from you guys on what your thoughts are and get a recommendation before we go any further. So you're right. It's not a long-term investment in the area. It's a short-term investment based on the mining and reclamation that's ongoing, but it allows us to essentially do that composting piece while we're back home. We've already got a truck coming back for stuff. We can put material in there, compost it, and then send that back out later. So it seemed to fill a need that was there. And then looking at the land use processes, it was like, oh, it's a vested need. And then they went into the green business and then realized that there was a solid waste component that needed to go with that as well.
So actually, Tim triggered another question for me. So let's say 5 years down the road, they decide we're done mining, we're done composting. What's the process for shutting it down? Is it like any other solid waste facility? Are we going to have another, you know?
They have a closure plan, so they would stop accepting. They would notify public health 30 days prior to closure. They would stop accepting materials at that time, and then for those that compost. And possibly shape pond. It's different than a landfill where you're burying everything and then figuring out what to do with it,
right,
having ongoing monitoring and maintenance. It is.
Because it's organic in nature, it's more.
I mean, it's easier to get rid of. I mean, they could take it to the transfer stations. They could take it to any other approved facility that accepts it. My anticipation would, I mean, thinking from a business perspective, they probably would know 6 months before they were going to stop and finish up their compost and get their compost out for various products and then just be done. Finish out whatever compost they have, stop operation. If our transfer stations close tomorrow, they're decided to close, and you know they would give 30-day notice. They would divert their trucks to an approved facility, and we would be stuck with an empty building. And so the long-term ramifications are.
Please don't shut down.
Yeah, please don't shut down.
Well, there is the snow. So that might be here.
But I mean that. So the infrastructure would be there, so similar to like a transfer station, your infrastructure would be there, but the solid waste itself would resolve itself.
Any other questions? Oh, I'll entertain a recommendation. Somebody wants to make a motion.
I would say I'd have to tread lightly because we're confronted with similar situations in a lot of ways, you know, operating at the solid waste facility in Clark County. And having to shuck and jive with the changes in regulations. But we operate, you know, we try to operate in front of the rules, stay in front of the rules, adjust to the rules as they come about. This feels like the entity needs to do, like Rich's suggestion of, you know, cease operations right now. Let's see if you guys can get yourselves in order. That's the process that we typically follow. We engage the agencies up front and work with neighborhood associations, get the product approved properly or declined properly. But we go through that process. And I think that where Rich is going with this letter, I think is the direction I would recommend as a group we look at. There's just too many questions to move forward with a yes or no, in my opinion.
Yeah, I like Rich's proposal here. I have a hard time thinking that a company like Tappany didn't understand that there was permits and regulatory things to deal with this much material on site. So that's it's kind of a bad mark to me to let them continue on. But I actually like the idea of having the site there if they follow the rules and stop operation now, deal with the leachate immediately somehow. But it's kind of I don't know how to deal with reconcile the fact that they were bringing this much material on site and kind of was trying to skirt, which I think they would recognize that they needed to have some kind of permit or something for. So.
I'm gonna stick my nose in one more time.
Sorry?
I'm gonna stick my nose in one more time.
Go ahead.
I think it's a good idea to have composting sites. I think we need those. But maybe this isn't ready yet.
Any other comments?
In reading Ridge's proposal here, you know, I think triggering that CEPA review, which seemed like it, you know, the traffic and the noise and the odors and a lot of those other things, I think that's going to kind of separate the wheat from the chaff to the root of the issue. Yeah, I would support what Rich has here.
Okay. Any other comments?
I would say I think Derek worded it well. In business, trying to be in front of the laws and understanding what you're getting into, and trying to be, you know, being proactive as opposed to being reactive. So I'd be in agreement with taking this to them and saying, cease operations, get everything in line, and then move forward. And then at that point, it's their decision. It's, you know, their business decision at that point. Do we want to go through this process, or do we just want to cease it and not move forward?
Alyssa, to the extent we take action and accept Rich's recommendations, would you return to us after you carry this back to them?
Yes, I ask for someone to read Rich's recommendations because I don't know what they say yet?
Well,
and then also
after we vote,
he's going to hand you a copy.
Oh, okay. Do you want me to read it for the record?
Yeah, we probably should.
Or make a motion.
Okay. I think the folks in the back.
You would make a motion. Someone says.
I think someone on the SWAC would make a motion and then read this. I think that would be the appropriate.
Somebody with a good speaking voice.
No.
I didn't come out right.
Someone on SWAC.
Okay, so I'll just tell you what it all that says. It's like three major points. Potential conditions for SWAC to consider in relation to the, I call it Tower Rock solid waste permit. Number one, effective, and then a date. It could be yesterday. The applicant shall stop receiving all compost feedstocks at the site until the solid waste permit is issued and all required improvements are completed. And there's three sub-bullets under that. A, this addresses some concerns associated with the tracking of mud from the site and ongoing impacts to the aquifer that have already been cited as violations of VMC, 14.26, which is the Water Resources Protection Ordinance. And then B, this addresses issues that have developed in the last 9 months, or maybe that's 2 years, 24 months, of operating without a permit, and sets the stage for proper implementation of necessary systems, i.e. needed improvements such as paving that can't be completed while stockpiles continue to grow. And then C under that assures that multiple problems do not grow unchecked until all necessary environmental controls are in place. And then point two, the applicant shall complete requirements of the Southwest Clean Air Agency for issuance of an air quality permit. And 2 points, subpoints. This triggers a CEPA review and provides an opportunity for traffic, safety, noise, odors, and other related issues to be addressed in a comprehensive manner. And then subpoint B assures that Clean Air Agency concerns are addressed before any additional processing and the treatment systems are properly designed. And then point number three, the applicant shall obtain engineering plan approval from the City of Vancouver. Plan shall be designed for compliance with BMC 14.25, that's stormwater control, and BMC 14.26, again, that's the Water Resources Protection. Construction of all needed improvements in the plan must be completed before any additional compost feedstock is brought to the site. And then one subpoint under that, this assures that the further receiving, processing, or stockpiling of feedstock is properly managed on a paved surface, and the contaminated stormwater is managed as detailed in the approved operations plan.
Numbers two and three have to happen anyway, right? Whether they're on this list or not.
Right. Before you would do your permit, those have to be passed.
And the clean air permit triggers a CEPA review.
That's what our stormwater folks pointed out. I'm not sure if Clint would need to check on that. Or
we have CEPA has to be completed before we can issue a permit, whether we do CEPA or somebody else does it.
So even though that the city doesn't require CEPA.
Yeah, typically what triggers CEPA is issuance of a permit or a government action or some type of action. And so since the city didn't have any actions to take, it didn't trigger a CEPA.
So again, number two and number three are going to happen whether they're on this or not.
Right.
Number one is really the big one.
Any discussion on this motion?
I would just recommend that with this document, we make sure that any motion includes giving Melissa or somebody with her to adjust any dates or time frames to make this accurate. You know, like 1B, you know, developed in the last 9 months. You probably have a better, more accurate idea of.
We learned of this through notice of intent to operate on March 21st, so I think that's where the 9 months. Came from,
well, perhaps put a date on it as learned of by this date. That way,
and then on that notice of intent, they have a start date that was earlier, but I can't confirm if any accuracy.
So that would be my only recommendation, is to ensure that the time frame is accurate in case it ends up being something that goes to a court. The documentation is I's dotted, T's crossed.
Okay. Any other comments?
And I don't know if we're at this point, if we're ready to say what a date should be. Should it be like tomorrow or 1st of March? Or again, I'm not really sure what the operational side of things would be. Do they need to get the thing? Do they need to work a week to get things kind of tied up? We don't want to leave it like, you know, close at midnight or something. But.
That would be good for Valerie to speak to.
Could I recommend that if you were to recommend that stop work order, that they would stop taking in any material immediately and then work towards over a time frame like 30 days to get the rest of that material off? I think that would be a reasonable way to do it. You don't want anything more coming in, but I think that would address your concern with having some dates in there that are still manageable.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. So, yeah, so I don't know if we could amend it to that, to say stop now and then take a certain amount of time, whatever would be needed on that 30 days or longer.
And in fairness, I think we should consider giving them an opportunity to get a hold of their haulers you know, if they were to start making phone calls at 7 o'clock when they've got trucks already on the way, those trucks are already on the way. Perhaps, you know, a week's time to ensure that anybody that's hauling to that facility knows that they're no longer accepting as of Monday, pick a date.
Garbage trucks aren't on the road. Compost haulers are.
Do we have a second for the motion?
I'll second the motion.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion carries.
So the motion will give us with some of the details that we've talked about.
Yep.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Could you guys email me that contract and then I can edit it and then send it out to for their review?
Yeah, we can check. We can work through Steve.
Yeah.
We'll be here as far as the time. So, yes.
You're up.
Real quick, I wanted to request, I'm going to try and cover the recycling cost rates very quickly, and then if we could strike the residential recycling contracts update for the agenda and potentially add a real quick conversation about the garbage bagging. So I touched on it a little bit earlier, erroneously out of order. But like I mentioned, we presented the idea of a recycling rate increase at a previous WAC meeting. So the initial request was Waste Connection made a formal request to receive additional rates from customers in order to cover the increased cost and increased scrutiny of international and domestic markets and the impacts of restrictions on what we could and could not import overseas. And that's led to an increased cost physically of slowing down the sort lines, adding more individual more people power to the line, which then in turn slows down their processing capacity. So through conversations with SWAC, our Regional Solid Waste System Steering Committee, our council, and then lots of talking to ourselves before bedtime and in the middle of the night thinking about it, we agreed to a compromise, or we agreed to a fix to this solution, which looks like a per ton charge of $68.91 that will be charged two trucks delivering curbside residential material to the transfer stations. So right now we have drafted an amendment to the hauling contract that allows CRC to charge that fee or that per ton fee on curbside residential materials. What that will do is that will translate to about $1.90 per month per household increase on their recycling bills. Right now where we're at is this amendment has been reviewed by our internal legal staff. Right now I think we just got it back from Waste Connection's legal staff today. And then I think there's a little bit more back and forth conversation needs to happen before the amendment that allows the fee is approved. We're also drafting a letter from the county manager to Waste Connections, which will establish the exact amount that rate is set, which is at $68.91. So between the amendment and the formal letter from our county manager that will establish the rates and allow Waste Connections to increase the costs and pass that along to the customers. We are thinking that rate will take effect in our areas on February 15th. I believe the City of Vancouver rate will take place, that's on April 1st. Is that the date?
The rate would go in April 1st.
Right. For the City of Vancouver residents. And then Washougal, Richfield, and Camas will all be negotiating their own contracts because they have their own contracts with Waste Connections, and those three cities will be negotiating their own. And I don't know if you have an update on any of those conversations or if that can happen until we're in this process. So.
There's not a definitive answer yet. So.
Okay. And like I mentioned before, per your request and council's request, there's messaging included with both mailed and emailed invoices explaining the fee, the reasoning for the fee, and calling out separately on the invoice what the fee is, so it's not just hidden in the existing rates, it's actually called out as a separate line item on the fee. And Waste Connections is taking the lead on that communication. They'll be taking the lead on the communication. We will continue our blog updates, our website updates, our newsletter conversations, but right now we're focused on shifting towards communicating to the public about what is supposed to be going into those carts. So I don't know if anybody has any additional questions or information. I feel like we tried to gather all of your feedback, and I think a lot of it was, this is, you know, we'd like to prevent this from happening again in the future. After this, I'd like to talk very briefly about how one strategy that we think will get there. But I was wondering, I just wanted to kind of get one final, are there any other questions or concerns about this recycling rate increase and the way it's going? One other detail is that through the letter and then I think subsequent conversation, we will establish a way to evaluate this rate annually. So if things get better, it can go down. If things get worse, we can adjust it. But there's some wiggle room so that we can take a look at this rate for this fee in the future and make some adjustments through a formal review process.
Chris, so there was a mention of a tiered fining system, depending on how your tagging goes. So is that what I understood? They'd get a warning, and then there'd be...
Oh, you're talking about what... So Tanya mentioned it very briefly. Did you talk about that?
Yeah, not really a fine,
right.
But there would be consequences for continuing for contamination in the cart. We're kind of terming it a progressive communication.
Right. So is it going to be a monetary?
What we talked about is, so you get a notification that there's contamination in your cart, and then we have a cart, a contamination team that comes out. So maybe the driver notices it the first time, tags your cart, then a team comes out, looks in your cart, leaves you information and feedback, and then if contamination is noticed again, you get a warning. We've considered offering to the customer, we're not taking your recycling cart today because there's contamination in it. Leave the cart behind. You can remove the contamination, or we can come back and empty it with the garbage truck. Choice is up to you. The charge will be this for the garbage truck removal. And then if they continue to violate, we are considering removing the cart altogether. And then the customer can earn the cart back after they attend a recycling 101 course or otherwise demonstrate that they have a better understanding of what can and cannot go on the cart.
And I just want to time out real quick. I want to honor your question, but I want to make sure that we, for records and notes, that we keep these two topics separate real quick. So I wanted to go back to real quick the recycling rate increase and the process we've gone through, just to make sure there's no formal motion or anything. I just want to know if there were any other questions or comments about the process and where we've landed, and obviously when we do a review process, we'll come back. So I just want to check in before we move on to this next thing and see if there are any questions or comments about that. All right, well then I guess we're going to go on. So real quick, so what Tanya is describing, Waste Connections in the City of Vancouver have been putting together this plan. Kim and the City of Vancouver and our program had been previously doing this an in-house process. We ran into some hiccups a couple years ago in perception of privacy invasion as far as our staff looking into recycling carts. And so we're trying to get ahead of that. What's going on right now is they're working on a plan. What Tanya described is that plan. And in the county, since we're not doing curbside composting, it may look slightly different, and we're also probably not going to be going to the fourth and fifth level of enforcement necessarily, just because I'm exercising. I wanted to approach it a little bit cautiously, given the direct feedback we've gotten from council on previous iterations of cart tagging. But we believe that it's a very effective way of addressing a behavior and communicating with individuals as close to the behavior as possible without hiding under their kitchen sink and watching what they're putting in their container. You know, we can do a lot of blanket outreach, and we just don't have the people for it, really. So, but really what it is dedicated Waste Connection staff going out ahead of routes, looking through all of the containers on that route, opening the lids, looking for contamination, If they see something, leaving a note behind that indicates specifically what it is and a reminder list of what goes in there. So it's a different type of an outreach. It's not a mailer. It's not a flyer. It's something different when you go out to get your cart that you're going to notice and you're going to see. It's definitely more personalized and it shows up. And there's even the option of, a kudos. I know other places have also done a kudos. You know, we didn't notice contamination this week. Good job. And the goal is to systematically get around to the entire county, but also to target routes that, because the drivers see contamination as it goes into the truck or as they're moving lids or moving containers around, to try and take a look at the containers or the routes that are more highly contaminated that we know about. Because those contamination is the reason our rates are going up right now.
Right.
So this is a strategy that is has seen success here in the past and is being modeled in a lot of our communities around us. But me personally, I'm trying to take a little bit more of a softer approach to reiterating this to our council as an effective strategy. And I think having Waste Connections take ownership of actually looking in the carts, since they own the material in the carts, that is an effective way to do this. So
I guess my thought on that is, you know, if you get to the third, fourth, you know, iteration of the oops, a 50-cent, you know, fine or fee, pretty much anybody can report 50 cents on their garbage bill. Could that 50 cents go to offset the waste management staff that's conducting those? Can it go towards an education program? Can it go towards maybe reducing this increase for next year? I guess the thought process is, if you're contributing to the problem, you should probably be contributing to the success of the program somehow. I'm not saying, you know, let's stick the Gestapo on them. You know, educate them. A lot of people don't know. I can't throw my clamshells in my recycling bin. I didn't know that until I went to Recycling 101. And Julie beat me over the head with that one.
So I think that's a very good point. And I think there is no formal fee or fine. I think it's you pay the processing cost. If it's garbage, you're going to pay what Waste Connections pays, what somebody would pay to throw away garbage. This is our targeted messaging. If you throw that clamshell in there, you're going to get a tag that has clamshell circled or tagged, or somebody's going to draw a picture of a clamshell. I don't know, you know, what those tags will look like, but
right.
That is that specific thing. And if they find your clamshells and your glass bottles and your flimsy, you know, fruit plastic clamshells, your other, you know, or plastic bags, those will also be tagged, and that is your moment, first moment to fix it.
Right.
You get a couple of chances to do that. So there's no, I don't think that there's, we haven't, well, I won't say we, I don't know if this program, if there's been a plan to really do a fine or a fee that then funds follow-up activity. We have the funds to do this program, and we have funds to do follow-up education. We would also like to take the data that we get from Waste Connections and do follow-up community or route-based education. I think that's a desire in the county anyways, is to try and figure out, similar to like a PUD bill, where the idea would be, hey, this is how your route is doing compared to other routes around the county or this community. Your contamination rate is abhorrent compared to this contamination rate over on this side of the city. So we would do follow-up activities, but I don't think there's a self-funded mechanism for that necessarily.
Something to think about, though.
And I know the city's looking at it as, this is kind of like the third generation. We've done car tagging a couple times. This is the third generation. Let's try it a year. At the end of the year, let's look and evaluate, kind of look at the data, have things improved, and then maybe the second year we change it a bit. Fines could be down the road, or more positive incentives could be based or something. So it could change. I think the idea is to learn and shift with the community as they learn good behavior.
And I think it's a good way to be more adaptive to the rapid rate at which the materials people buy things. The packaging, everything, it's a much more agile way to, you know, we can change the tags that get left behind much faster than we can develop a whole outreach program around flexible packaging that's going to be, you know,
right,
showing up out of nowhere. So it's a much more agile way, too, for us to keep on top of those materials changes. So I guess the question, too, is if I told you that we were going to be sending out, Waste Connections was going to be sending out staff to just open your lid. They're not sorting through anything. They're not taking anything out. They're just doing lid flips, looking in. Is there any, you know, would you feel like, would you be supportive of that being an effective mechanism for us to communicate to our public about that? Or do you have concerns about people looking in your recycling bin for the sake of looking for contamination?
And the recycling bins are curbside.
Would be, yeah,
your curbside. You're not going up to the side of someone's house to look through it.
I mean, if so, that's what they're doing, then that is not the design of the program. If recycling is not at the curb, then we will not be going
there. Yeah,
we're not
going
to knock on your door and ask you to bring it out
there
either.
I'm just joking about that.
No, I get you.
Has it already been determined, though, once your trash or my trash recycling is at the curb, it's now kind of public?
Public is probably not the word.
Material in the cart is owned by the hauler.
Mm-hmm.
But it's largely a perception thing that we're dealing with.
Well, absolutely it's a perception thing, but yeah. I just think about, you know, you hear stories about people going through someone's trash, and through those stories, whether it's, you know, a celebrity or whoever, or police, or whatever that case might be, in my mind, once it's out of the curb, It's there, you know. I don't have any expectation necessary of privacy. And if there's something that I don't want to be seen, then it shouldn't be out there.
Or you put it at the bottom of your recycling.
Right.
No, I think that's a good point, and I don't know. That might be a question for us to think about. Are they required to report any?
I wasn't even talking that part.
But I understand.
But my perception is once I put it on the curbside, my expectation of privacy is gone.
We've got a number of conversations on Nextdoor, specifically regarding folks rooting around work cans and bottles. And there's a very definitive line of, I put it out on the curb, I don't want it, and the other half of, it's still mine until they pick it up. I think as long as the message gets out that if it's on the curb, you've surrendered it to the hauler, and the people that are looking through it are the hauler. I think making sure that that identification, that it's not just me looking through Jason's stuff, and they understand that it's, you know.
Yeah, when we did cart tagging in prior years, because we skipped this last year and we're skipping this upcoming one, I had my crews where identification. And like some, they would tell me anecdotally, yeah, you know, people would come out and they'd be like, what are you doing? And then once they learned, they start asking questions. And
right.
They were really excited about it.
Right.
And so, I mean, I would assume that Waste Connections, what they would be doing is something similar. They would be using identification and, yeah.
Yeah, identification will be a big piece.
Yes.
Alright. Any other comments or concerns or suggestions or support? Thank you very much.
Any public comments?
Oh, I wanted to real quick, but you have a thing. I'm sorry. I neglected to introduce our newest SWAC member, Kent Meyer, the new kid on the block, as he put it. Just an interesting quick fact about him. He either led or was part of the team that drafted Clark County's 1981 solid waste management plan.
Yep.
So has been familiar with the game for quite a while. So I just wanted to welcome him to the group and introduce him to everybody formally. So I apologize for not doing that at the beginning of the meeting. So.
Any public comments?
Step up here so you can hear me better.
Good.
My name is Delaine Brown.
Oh, and just one, there's about a 3 minute per comment.
Okay.
Just
okay.
So you have that heads up.
My name is Delaine Brown. I'm a resident of the Bristol Manor area, which encompasses all of the housing development areas around this proposed facility. And I'm a former planning and zoning commissioner. In one position, I was elected, and in the other, it was an appointed position. And I served for many years in Idaho and Washington State, so I am familiar with statutes in Washington. Sorry we're late to the party, but we didn't get the invitation in enough time. And I was told, thank you for keeping me aware. Mr. Harmon notified me that it was not mandatory to send out notices to anybody farther than 300 feet away. So our neighborhoods will be severely impacted, and they're not in that 300-foot barrier around Tepani, but around this facility. We're very concerned with air quality studies. We're concerned with the noise. The truck traffic is already almost out of control. It runs right by on 18th Street, an elementary school. As a planning and zoning commissioner, it was my duty to plan a 20-year comprehensive plan for areas of impact where we thought that the city would grow. And the infrastructure has not been done in this area. You know the width of the streets on 172nd and 18th Street, and they're extremely narrow. There's a lot of waiting at the traffic lights, and the truck traffic has only it made that worse. So we already have smell, you know, and you know that when you have smell, you have air particulates. I know that they have to comply with the permitting. In the permitting process, they have to come under compliance. But my question is, who gets to be the policeman? You know, I've done this since I was a youth, you know, and I've been an advocate and I've been an activist. And I'm retired now, and I bought my little one-level retirement house, and I don't want to go into police duty, you know, of trying to keep our neighborhood smell-free and noise-free. And I know that as commissioners and people that sit on these boards, I thank you for your service, because I know that I was always listening to what citizens had to say, because their quality of life is important to them. That's what makes up the fabric of who we are. Some of the other things are, let's see, so noise, smell, environmental impact, the aquifer. Yes, they'll have to have the leachy pond, but as some of you mentioned, you know, what happens if the facility is closed up? Is our aquifer going to be in danger? We're just now hearing about things in Flint, Michigan, you know, where years and years of abuse of the land to the aquifer poisoned people. You know, this is the long-term impact that we need to see about, you know, to really think about ahead of time. And another thing is that I just can't understand why a facility that has is in the permit process and they're already breaking the rules. They haven't complied with what they've been asked to do. So if they're allowed, you know, to have this permit and they go under full operation, where's the watchdog then? You know, it's like you treat your children, your teenagers, you treat them, if you're not consistent with their discipline, you know, they're just going to keep doing it. So after the permit's in place, I'm just wondering where's the compliance, who's the watchdog, where's the compliance?
These guys right here.
You go to public health for the solid waste permit,
well,
for doing inspections.
Let me rephrase that, sir. Where's the monitor? I understand that you're, but I'm the monitor. I'm the hall monitor. And I don't want to be taking names and running downtown all the time and being that woman, you know. I mean, we're just trying to protect our neighborhood here, and it's really not conducive. It's dense. It's getting denser all the time. There's land grab on from developers. And, hey, I'm a businessman, too. You know, I'm a businesswoman. Been in business for many years, so I understand the balance, you know, of making keeping people employed and contributing to the economy. So I understand that, but I also know that paramount to that is our quality of living. Let's see, what else? I used to be able to get up and do this, and my mind was so sharp that I could just rattle it off, but not anymore. So the entrances to the facilities are causing problems right into our neighborhoods right now. The entrances, the trucks are barreling out of there, and they're big. They're dump trucks. You know, they're not the guy that just trimmed his yard waste and is dropping it off there. So I don't know what's going on, but we feel bad because we haven't seen, there are a lot of professional people in our group too that can understand the engineering reports. We haven't seen any engineering reports or plans of operation, and when we went on to the website, it's just a blank, you know, it doesn't work. So you hit that to see if you can read about it, and it doesn't work. So I don't feel like the people of East Vancouver have heard enough about this. And I think it really, I thank you for your decision to postpone and to do more study, because it's a very impactful decision.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Any other comments?
She pretty much covered everything that's in my brain, but I do want to confirm, I live two blocks from the site. I'm on Northeast Plains, and I never received notice. I only know because somebody said, hey, did you see this thing on Nextdoor? Who reads Nextdoor? Not everybody, okay? So once I saw it, I'm all over Nextdoor. But I know traffic's not your issue, but you're going to hear about it in a little bit. I will go out 170th and cross 18th. There's times during the day where I can't do that, so then I go down 20th, turn in front of Harmony Elementary to use the light, which impacts the school traffic. Okay, I'm not the only one that does that. It's only, it's getting worse every day, and the trucks are not. Okay. Yeah, it's not wide enough for what's going on now. I gave Quint a note. I spoke to H&H, and they told me that they have to turn everything twice a year, and they try to do it on non-windy days. Well, where H&H is, I'm not real familiar with that side of Vancouver, but I know the further east you go, the windier you get. And I read in the material that they have to turn like five times in the first 14 days of receipt of stuff, of the piles. And that's during the wet season, which was noted was October through May, I believe. Okay, so that's going to be the time when you guys are going to hear from us. Because guess what? We're going to smell it and we're going to breathe it. And the school is closer to them than my house. I think that's it. So thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for your decision to wait.
Any other comments?
I have to thank Ms. Sutton for this one. She brought up the cannabis recycling. There's a minimum of 1,000 feet requirement by state law, and based on their schematics, they are not in compliance. That includes transport. They will go right by the elementary school.
Any other comments? Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Anything else? We'll go to the order.
I move we go home now.
So moved.